a very good evening to you. Welcome along to another Sweet and Swing here on Manx Radio. I'm Howard Kane, aged to you, and always a pleasure to have your company. What have we got? What about some Louis Belson? Music of Ivor Novello? Glenn Gray and the Casa Loma Orchestra? More from Carol Gibbons' Sand in the Shoes, of course. To get us going? Just put your arms around me. That's a good way to get going, isn't it? Put your arms around me, honey. I wouldn't say no. Anyway, how are we all? In good fettle, I hope, and perked up a bit by the apparent appearance of spring quite late in the day, but we have had more than one day now without wind and rain. So I think spring might be vaguely on its way. It was quite nice yesterday, and it's been all right today, really. And I believe the weekend is better than was originally forecast. Not necessarily cracking the flags, but those who have got good thick fleeces may be thinking of getting the barbecue out. Don't know. Just putting it out there as a little thought. I'm quite a keen barbecuer, if I can. The Memsahib isn't quite so keen unless it's actually into the 20s. So barbecues at this time of the year, when it's sunny and spring-like, but not necessarily into the teens in temperatures, usually consists of me standing outside barbecuing something and then handing it in through the window for the Memsahib to eat. Am I alone in doing that? I don't know. Anyway, good fun one way or another. Joe Loss, of course, with Elizabeth Beatty, I think, on the vocals there. Doesn't actually say on that CD, but I'm I would have a good stab at Elizabeth Beatty. Shout at me if I'm wrong. You know where to get me. howardcaine@manxradio.com. Lars himself, born over in the East End, I think, Spitalfields, youngest of four. And they were Russian Jews and first cousins, his parents, Israel and Ada. Started leading the band in the early 30s and working at the Astoria Ballroom, and then also breaking into variety at the Kit Kat Club. And in 1934, topped the bill at the Holborn Empire. But the same year, moved back to the Astoria Ballroom, where he led a 12-piece band. And in 1935, her first radio broadcast with the Joe Loss Orchestra, and her first ever radio broadcast, Vera Lynn, of course. He was also the subject, if you remember, This Is Your Life, with old Eamon, on two occasions. May 1963, he was surprised by Eamon Andrews at the Hammersmith Palais in London, and then, clearly, they were running out of ideas, or maybe thought, you know, he was so good, they'd do him twice. So they surprised him again for more of his life in October 1980, when Eamon Andrews popped up at London's Portman Hotel during a star-studded party to celebrate Joe Loss's 50 years in show business. Also, it is rumoured, well, I think more than rumoured, I think it's pretty much known, he was a great favourite of the British royal family, particularly the Queen Mother, I think, and the Queen to a large degree, both ex, now I'm afraid, no longer with us, of course, but they were both Joe Loss fans. I seem to recall Queen Elizabeth talking about that, and I'm pretty certain the Queen Mother as well was very fond of Joe Loss. He performed at not only the Royal Variety performances, but also at Christmas parties hosted by the Royal Family, which earned him not only the OBE, but also the LVO, an honour which is in the personal gift of the Queen, or King, as the case now is. And no stranger to the Isle of Man, of course, played over here many seasons, Joe Loss, with his orchestra. I think the old maestro supported him on more than one occasion, as I recall. Certainly, I think, bumped into him one time walking along the Douglas Promenade during one of the seasons. Well, I enjoyed that. Good way to get going. Right, where are we going to go from there? Right, from putting your arms around one, what else can we do? Something sentimental? Sentimental Journey, of course, Harry Gold and his Pieces of Eight. And again, Harry in that small but august band of leaders, band leaders themselves, of course, and musicians in this programme, who I actually met. And that, yes, I can't say I knew him, but I definitely met him in a pub in London with the old maestro. More years ago than I probably care to remember, at least 40 years ago, probably more. I can remember it. It was a Sunday lunchtime. I can't remember the exact pub. I know it was in London, and I was with the old maestro. I know he said, let's go along to wherever it was. Can't remember the pub, and they were playing a Sunday lunchtime session. And it was Harry Gold and his Pieces of Eight. And Harry was a rare old age then, I think. Probably even older than I am now. But still playing well. With the baritone, of course. Yeah, the baritone saxes. Love, or favourite instrument. Love the sound of that. And a fine player he was too. And a nice chap, I think, from all accounts. Now then, I promise you some Ivor Novello, the music of Ivor Novello. Haven't featured this for a while. And, or at least much from Ivor. From Glamorous Night, When the Gypsy Played. I think there could be some violin here. What do you reckon?
Oh.
there would be violin somewhere along the line. Ivor, or the music of Ivor Novello, can't even say it, Novello, not Novello, from Glamorous Night, When the Gypsy Played, Patricia Johnson, John Stoddard, Patricia Bartlett, the Linden Singers, and the New World Show Orchestra, conducted by Kenneth Alwyn. I'm told via the liner notes. That's pretty much all I get from the liner notes. Not a great deal on that one. Ivor Novello, of course, himself born in Wales, I think he was, wasn't he? And I see he was, like so many, wasn't born Ivor Novello. He was David Ivor Davies, 1893. Dramatist, actor, singer, composer. Became one of the most popular of the British entertainers in the first part of the 20th century. Did come from a musical family, and of course, his first big hit, Keep the Home Fires Burning, which was just the sort of material they wanted during the Great War of 1914-1918. Super popular, that one, Keep the Home Fires Burning. And then his 1917 show, Theodore and Co., was a wartime hit as well. And after that, he went on to do several numbers for musical comedies. Well, I think we needed a bit of comedy after the First War, and was eventually commissioned to write the scores of complete shows, and wrote his musicals in the style of operetta, and often composed the music to the libretti of Christopher Hassel. And then by the 20s, he turned his hand to acting and films and stage appearances. He was in Alfred Hitchcock's The Lodger, Downhill, played various characters, went to Hollywood briefly, but then soon returned to Britain, where he had more success on stage, appearing in his own lavish West End productions of musicals, the best known of which, Glamorous Night, of course. Good stuff. Amazing how these names just disappear into thin air, don't they? One way or another. Ask anyone, I think, under the age of 40 or 50 these days, Ivor Novello, you probably get a bit of a blank look and a stare, would be my guess. Right, well, I think that was definitely very much on the sweet side of things. So I think now we need something on the swingier side of things. How about some Mary Lou Williams? Thank you.
been doggone sweet on me. Daddy, you're the only one I see. You know I need but you, 'cause you my man. You loves me like no one can. Something about you I can't resist. When you kiss me, Daddy, I stay kissed. Oh, Daddy, squeeze me and squeeze me again. Oh, Papa, don't stop till I tell you when. Now, Daddy, squeeze me, kiss me some more. Just like you did before. Your Papa Cupid is standing close by. Oh, Daddy, don't let your sweet baby cry. Just pick me up on your knee. I just get so you know, oh, when you squeeze me.
For there for you. First off, Mary Lou Williams, the wonderful, much undersung and underrated, although I think there's just been a film made of her life quite recently, hasn't there? I haven't seen it. I must go and check that out. Swinging for Joy. And then Mildred Bailey imparting us to Squeeze Me. Don't need to get away with the lyrics these days. I suppose you wouldn't. It'd be seen as non-PC, I would guess, but don't think it particularly worried Mildred back in the day. From an album of all sorts of great blues singers on that one. Mildred herself, Mildred Rinker, her real name. Rinker's quite a good name, actually. Rather like that. Rinker, quite unusual. Back in 1907 and had numerous hits. Queen of Swing, she was. Rocking Chair Lady, Mrs. Swing, Sentimental Reasons, Doing the Uptown, Lowdown, all those sort of numbers. Grew up in Idaho, where her mother was a member of their reservation there, and they moved over to Washington when she was 13, and both of her younger brothers became musicians. Al Rinker started performing as a singer with another singer who did fairly well. He was a young lad called Bing Crosby. I'll leave you to decide who became more famous, Al Rinker or Bing Crosby. And as adults, Charles Rinker was a lyricist, and Miles Rinker, her brother, was a clarinet and saxophone player who went on to become a booking agent. And Bailey herself, just went on to great success in many ways. Like I said, moved to Seattle at 17, worked as a sheet music demonstrator at Woolworths for a time, married and divorced, which is where the other name came from, Bailey. So it's not a stage name, it was her married name. Ted Bailey she married, and she kept the surname even after the divorce because she thought it sounded more American than Rinker, which is actually, I think, of German or Swiss origin. And then went on to tour with the West Coast Review and finished in California, where she started working at the radio station KMTR and at a speakeasy in Bakersfield called the Swedes. And then with the help of her second husband, Benny Stafford, she became an established blues and jazz singer on the west coast of the United States. And according to Gary Giddens, in his book Bing Crosby, A Pocketful of Dreams, I think the old maestro had that. I wonder if he threw it out or not, whether it's still there. Should take a look at that. So the early years of this, 1903, 1940, she found work for her brother Al Rinker and Bing Crosby, who had started performing. So it's there's a link there between Mildred Bailey and bringing Bing Crosby into the prominence and fame that he enjoyed in later life. And they went over to see him, and it's said that they travelled over from Spokane to join her in Los Angeles. That's Al Rinker and Bing Crosby. Giddens says Crosby heard about Louis Armstrong from Mildred Bailey, who urged him to hear Armstrong if Crosby was to be a serious jazz singer. She also played Crosby records from her collection by Ethel Waters and Bessie Smith. And then Crosby, in turn, helped Mildred Bailey by introducing her to Paul Whiteman, and she went on to sing with Whiteman's band from 1929 to 1933. I love all these interlinking of, you know, Mildred Bailey helping Bing Crosby to become famous and Bing helping Mildred with her career. They're all interlinked if you go digging deep enough. Now then, hello to John again, regular listener. Hi John, always nice to hear from you. A great little card from him the other day. He comes out with some cracking cards with, it's almost like looking in a mirror, except it's a dog. It's a very happy-looking long-haired Labrador, I think. Yeah, I think that's right. Who also happens to be wearing a pair of gentleman's spectacles and a flat cap. He looks happy enough to be posing anyway. I don't think he was wearing them all day. And he says, "Dear Howard, just to say, I'm still listening. I'd love to hear anything by the Big Ben Banjo Band." Yeah, back in the 50s, they used to play on the BBC Light programme on the Music While You Wait 30-minute programme. Looking forward to the next programme. Best wishes, John. Well, thank you very much for that, John. Great card as well. Keep them coming. Wonderful stuff. Well, I've got a special treat for you because, yes, the Big Ben... the Big Ben Banjo Band. Not easy to say quickly, is it? We're indeed super popular. They did some theme tunes as well, but I found this collection. So you can settle back, John. Get your load up your cocoa or whiskey or beer or whatever you fancy when you're listening to Sweet and Swing, and enjoy a good 5 or 6 minutes worth of a selection of medleys from Big Ben Banjo Band. Let's Get Together from 1954. Gosh, almost recent. Aha. There you go, John. And everyone else. A whole medley. You could probably pick out quite a few. Yes, sir, she's my baby. Swanee, I think, was there as well. I think we had another rendition of Put Your Arms Around Me, Honey, which we started the programme with this evening. They were all there. All the old best numbers. Given a rendition by Big Ben Banjo, or Big Ben Banjo Band, back in the 1950s, 1954. Super popular around about then. And they played for sort of, you know, the minstrel shows and all the rest of the sort of stuff that I'm afraid you wouldn't see on TV anymore. The music, I think, you know, you can. I'm afraid we'll leave the argument about the minstrel shows for another day. Probably best that we did move away from those. The music, of course, was very upbeat and cheerful, and did come from that sort of tradition, it had to be said. But I hope you enjoyed that, John. You can tap along in your slippers to that one, can't you? I don't know about dancing so much. It's more of a foot tapper than a dancer, that sort of stuff. But I was looking online and quite a few people saying, oh, you know, the world would be a happier place if we still had that sort of music going around. And you can't get away from the fact that it's very cheerful, can't you? I mean, it's upbeat, it's cheerful, it's positive, all those other things. Now then, Carol. We've been looking back at Carol Gibbons for the last few weeks and a little bit of a retrospective of his music and life and times and many ways. And 1942, and we hear Carol himself singing in Moonlight Cocktail.
It's up to you. Moonlight cocktails need a few. Cool it in the summer breeze. Serve it in the starlight underneath the trees. You'll discover tricks like these are sure to make your moonlight cocktail please. Follow the simple directions and they will bring life of another complexion where you'll be king. You will awake in the morning and start to sing. Moonlight cocktails are the thing.
That wasn't this very nice. You can hear that sort of American accent of Gibbons. Very laid back, maybe not the greatest of singers, but it suits, I think, his delivery there, that very relaxed and intimate setting of a Moonlight Cocktail. Wouldn't mind one myself, actually. and more intimate than sort of the modern airs or Glenn Miller or such like. Hint of Miller towards the end there. And the other side of that record when it came out had Billy Campbell singing Miss You from Universal's Strictly in the Groove, which starred the Dinning sisters Martha Tilton and the Ozzie Nelson Band, if you remember them. Flamingo Blues from Louis Belson. I promised you some Louis Belson. That's a 2-CD package from our friends at Avid Jazz. Always great supporters of the show with supplying material and such like. And that one's not been out of its wrapper. We can't have played that one before. It was still in its cellophane. I struggled to get it out of the cellophane as well because I haven't got any fingernails. I still managed to bite them after 60 years, but never mind, that's another story. Louis Belson at the drums, of course, Don Abney at the piano, Charles Truck Power and Bass, and Harry Edison. Of the four, I think the only one who came to the Isle of Man. Harry Edison certainly came over here. Harry Sweets Edison on one or two occasions from the Manx Jazz Club, and so he's another gentleman I can put into my elite club of players from Sweet and Swing I've actually met over the years. On the trumpet there, and the liner notes by Nat Hentoff says, yeah, it strikes me, he says, Nat, not me, Louis Belson's freest album, this is, to date, because there's ample solo space for everyone, and Louis has intelligently limited the number and extent of the drum solos. No one likes the drum solos other than the drummers, do they? Was recorded in November 1957, following an engagement by Louis and this group at the Flamingo Hotel in Las Vegas. Don't know if the Flamingo's still there or not. I have a friend who goes to Las Vegas on a regular basis for work. He's based in the States, and he keeps saying, oh, you must come. You'd love it. You might go there, and I know these great clubs. So one of these days, I'll try and take him up on the offer while he's still there and travelling there on a regular basis. So it sounds, when you look at the album originally, that it's going to be a live recording from the Flamingo, but it's not. It's just called At the Flamingo, as we've heard after that session or that stint he did there. Great sound, and it is probably... It's not modern jazz, it's still firmly rooted in the swing era, but has a hint of more modernism and a bit more free, not quite so constricted, I think, as Nat suggests in his notes. And apparently he was a really nice chap all round. He played, of course, Louis with Benny Goodman and Tommy Dorsey and Harry James and Duke Ellington for a couple of years. Jazz at the Philharmonic with his own small bands as well. All sorts of people. And he's always smiling. Whenever you see him, he always looks happy. And it seems that wasn't for show. It seems like he was generally a very nice chap. Abney, the piano player we mentioned there, Don Abney, says, as a leader, Louis makes everything so pleasant. I've never worked for anyone who's so congenial. He's a first-rate organiser, a good musician beside being a great drummer, and being more conscious of dynamics, for one thing, than most drummers. And the fact that he uses the two bass drums adds an extra element of showmanship. Yeah, it must have done. He was right in the vanguard. I mean, lots of rock drummers have used two bass drums, but for quite some time now, going back 30, 40, 50 years. But Louis was there before them with his two bass drum setup, and he could use them as well. He says the fact that he had the two bass drums had this extra showmanship. Sometimes, for instance, he played on a revolving platform, and when his back was turned to the audience, they could see the remarkable coordination of his feet. And he also often uses lights around the end of a solo, the lighting serving to heighten the climax and give the illusion of an even faster motion of what's actually going on. So a proper showman. Not just a great drummer and a great musician, a great all-rounder, and apparently a really nice chap as well. Can't argue with that, can you? What is that I see on the horizon? Could that be a mirage?
Bye.
I like that. I like that a lot. Mirage, Glenn Gray and the Casa Loma Orchestra from back in the 1930s, from a 2-CD set. Sadly, 1 CD's missing. I have to go into the library, see if we can find that one, on a Jasmine. And untraceable, it says, the actual owner of that music or the person who wrote it. It's not listed at all, just untraced, it says. Mirage. Great number, though, with that lovely Eastern feel. And if you're pondering, as I'm sure you were, Glenn Gray, you'll have heard, sort of a great Glenn Millerite, and sort of led that band afterwards. Casa Loma itself was a castle-like structure built by Sir Henry Pellet, a Canadian philanthropist, in his estate to the north of Toronto. It took 3 years to complete the building, and the Pellets moved in during 1913. The building had 98 rooms. It had suites of bedrooms, public rooms, a library designed to house 100,000 volumes, and a basement large enough for a regiment of soldiers to drill. They also had an imposing ballroom, and they lived in the Casa Loma until Lady Pellet died in 1924. Sounds all right, doesn't it? Whereupon Sir Henry moved to his country residence near King Ontario. He had another place as well. This was just his... Oh, gosh. The mind boggles, doesn't it? And, of course, they did have an orchestra. But then there was the Depression and such like, and the Orange Blossom Orchestra, as it was, went out on the road, and they decided to stay out there because they could get work. And then they were taken over. They formed a cooperative band, which they just called the Casa Loma Orchestra. Got work in Canada, and after a couple of years, the leadership of the band was taken over by Glenn Gray. There you go, if you didn't know. Fascinating stuff, I tell you. Love it. We'll be back, same time, same place. No, we won't. It's the Guild next week. We'll be back the week after that. See you then. Cheerio.